Did you know using your browser in incognito mode doesn't actually protect your privacy? Take back your privacy with IPVanish VPN. Just one tap and all your data, passwords, communications, browsing history, and more will be instantly protected. IPVanish makes you virtually invisible online. Use IPVanish on all your devices, anytime you go online at home, and especially on public Wi-Fi. Get IPVanish now for 70% off a yearly plan with this exclusive offer at ipvanish.com/audio.
Sick of being upsold at gyms?
My guy, you're currently a base member. For $90 more, I can upgrade you to our Shred membership. For $130 more, you'll be a swole member. And for just $300 more, you'll reach Sweat Platinum.
At Planet Fitness, you'll get energy without the upsell. Never pushy, always free fitness training and equipment for every workout. It's fitness that fits your budget. Join Planet Fitness for just $1 down and $10 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, May 10th. See Home Club for details.
Hello, welcome to Modern Data Bait. My name is Carissa, and I'm going to be your host for tonight. We are discussing a really interesting topic tonight, whether or not COVID restrictions are silly. So really excited to get into this. We have two really great speakers. The Brief, I know he's been on before, and we are really happy to welcome Aaron. He is new with us tonight, so really happy to have you on, Aaron. We are a neutral platform, and we host debates on science, religion, and politics. So if you enjoy controversial debates, consider hitting that subscribe button, as we have many more of them coming up. In fact, you'll see on the bottom right of your screen right now, we have a Kickstarter going to cover the honorarium for a big debate with Michael Shermer and Mike Jones on whether Christianity is dangerous. If you'd like to help watch that live, it's only $3 and will help make this debate actually happen. The link to pledge to that Kickstarter campaign is in the description box below, and you can sign in with your Facebook account if you don't want to make a Kickstarter account. It's a lot, but it's a new idea, so we're trying to help explain the Kickstarter stuff to people in detail. So definitely be sure to check that out. We also have the links for the speakers in the description box below. So if you really like what you're hearing, definitely go and check those out. I'm actually going to give a little bit of time for them to introduce themselves and kind of explain what is in their link. So The Brief, if you want to go ahead and explain, what can people find in your link?
Yeah, so my name is, I introduced myself on my channel as Jay, and the channel is called The Brief. And it's been a bit of a slow start. Things can get busy at times, and we know how all that is. We start a project, and then life gets busy, and we have to step back from it. But my hope is to have very short, 10 minutes or less videos that go through a variety of topics that are current, and take a little bit more of a contrarian view on some of those. I feel like the mainstream narrative is pretty well known, but I think people are really interested in other takes on those news stories. So that's kind of the bulk of it. I do have a Twitter handle, kind of somewhat anonymous on there. It's at Chantel underscore Rome, and that's on Twitter. It's just my way of interacting with the Twitter world a little bit more incognito, to be able to engage with people in controversial ideas. And it's something I really enjoy. I want to be able to know the truth. And if I'm wrong, then all the better, because then I know the truth then after that. So that's kind of my position, and that's what you'd find for me.
Wonderful. Thank you so much again for coming on. Aaron, if you'd like to introduce yourself as well, that would be wonderful.
Hey, my name's Aaron. I'm living in Northern California. We're in a lockdown right here. I don't have a specific channel, but I decided to come on and discuss this topic regarding how unsilly the COVID precautions are. I have a bachelor's degree, and I work in communications.
Wonderful. Well, thank you both so much for coming on. And the structure of tonight's debate is going to be 10-minute openings. Jay, you're going to actually be going first, since you are the affirmative, followed up by Aaron with his 10-minute opening. We'll have about 50 minutes to an hour of open conversation, and we'll have about 30 minutes of question and answer at the end as well. So if you do have a question, be sure to put that into the Super Chat, and we will definitely get that to at the end of the discussion. So without further ado, Jay, if you want to start it off, the floor is yours.
Excellent. Thank you. All right. I've got a lot to get through. And so again, our topic tonight, are the COVID restrictions stupid? I think so. And here's why. COVID-19 lockdown was our first experience in a full denial of freedom. Businesses forced closed, schools padlocked, church the same, theaters dead. We were told to stay home, risking fines if we leave and jail if we don't pay. We couldn't travel. We were separated from loved ones. This job is essential. That one is not. This surgery is canceled. This one isn't. You want a visitor from abroad? Forget about it. The neighboring state? Only with a two-week quarantine. This is the introduction from a book by Jeffrey Tucker called Liberty or Lockdown. Our statement today, COVID restrictions are stupid. I'm actually fairly convinced that most people think that this is true intuitively. There is an intuitive aspect to it. However, as with any information war, it is very easy to be dissuaded of this intuitive thought and convince yourself that you're not an expert or that you don't have time to fully understand the nuance of the situation. Who am I to question these things, right? This is a great and fantastic tragedy. And it is especially tragic when you consider the measured value of the restrictions or lack thereof, pitted against the very measurable damage we have caused to virtually every level of society, especially those who can least afford it. To add to this, we had an option of implementing a targeted approach that would have done a fraction of the damage, and yet a binary choice was given, again, to invoke Mr. Tucker's book title, Liberty or Lockdown. Now, before I continue, let's be clear about the restrictions that I'm talking about. Mask use, mandatory, inside, outside, anyone older than two, from the CDC directly, wash your hands, use hand sanitizer every time you touch your mask. Even if you are outside by yourself, away from others, again, from the CDC, wear a mask if that's what authorities demand. No social gatherings, limits on social gatherings, limit on outdoor gatherings, non-essential businesses closed, events shut down, religious institutions closed, restaurants, indoor, outdoor dining, limits on capacity, personal contact services like gyms and salons closed, the arts, theater, museum, galleries, concerts, all shut down. Travel from the CDC, do your plans include travel by bus, train, airplane, which might make staying 6 feet apart difficult, then they recommend you not make those plans. Social distancing, curfews, healthcare, elective surgeries canceled, elective procedures canceled, cancer screenings, dental visits, schools closed down, college students sent home, internships shuttered, daycare centers closed down, educational outcomes affected, childhood and after school programs of all types ended. That's what we're talking about. This is a piece briefly by the New York Times. I'm just gonna quote just a very small part of it. It's also hard to tally the indirect fallout of lockdowns. A death certificate can tell us that someone died of COVID-19. It cannot tell us that the social isolation of lockdown was a factor in someone's drug overdose. There is no nightly ovation for survivors of domestic violence. These tragedies have become an ambient backdrop to everyday life, present but forgotten, very real but ignored. Perhaps America has simply gotten comfortable ignoring the quiet suffering of others. It can be easier to shut our eyes to the outcomes, wait for the vaccine, and try to move on. But doing so would be a mistake. This virus is not behind us. How to best mitigate its damage is a question of the present, not the past. So now, what are we talking about? This debate's gonna happen in two ways. This debate will be a debate, I hope, and I believe, of factual claims, as it should be. But then this debate should turn and maybe morph into something a bit more than just facts. It should be something much more fundamental. It should be about freedom. And I'm sure there's probably some people going, oh my, here we go, freedom. It's gotta be freedom. But for those that check out at this point, I'm sorry for your cynicism. There's a lot to be said about this idea. I would quote, birds born in cages think flying is an illness. Now, to my claims of fact. Step one, what was the goal of the restrictions? Step two, did the restrictions affect the way that we reached that goal? Step three, what did we trade for the results that we got? So what was the goal? The old mantra, 14 months to flatten the curve, right? But ultimately we're talking about overwhelming the healthcare system. And the metrics we would measure would be hospital beds, ICU beds, ventilators, hospital capacity, that kind of thing. The prediction based off models was that this crisis would reach such levels that we would effectively exhaust our capacity and people would die in waiting rooms and in buses being turned away. So that was the goal. Whoop. Sorry, I messed up my notes here. That was cool. If it's worth noting that this goal has shifted from flatten the curve to stop the spread, which certainly seems connected, But the sentiment really relates to stopping all of transmission if possible, as opposed to keeping transmission from spinning wildly out of control. So let's look at the data. These are current numbers that I pulled as of today, and I was trying to get the most recent stuff. I don't have time to talk through all of them because there's too much, but I'll just hit some specific states. In Arizona, as of today, the hospital bed capacity is 90%. That's the same spot we were about in July. So we're not much different from that point. 30% of patients are in the hospital with a positive COVID-19 test, though that is not specific. So they might be there for other reasons, but that's being reported that way. I checked, and I would imagine there would be some immediate group of headlines, but you'll have to take my word for it. I looked, there are no reports of any singular hospital being overwhelmed in Arizona, period. I looked, and I would imagine if there was a hospital that was completely inundated, that they were, you know, bursting at the seams, it would be front page news. You would see it. Obviously, we would know this, but there are no articles. Now, there are many articles that talk about how it could be, might be, will be, in X number of days and weeks it will be. But that goalpost keeps getting pushed back. We don't actually see any hospitals being overwhelmed. Okay, so South Dakota, where, you know, news reports were hailing South Dakota a couple of weeks ago as the next, like, enormous COVID hotspot. Disregard for COVID, you know, restrictions was certainly to blame, you know, led to an overwhelming situation, especially since they have a lot of rural hospitals there. But when we look at the numbers, currently, South Dakota's hospital capacity, they're at 58%. And 16% of those are COVID patients. So we would assume that South Dakota's peak 2 weeks ago from now would hit the hospitals at this point, and they would be bursting at the seams. But again, we don't see that. Okay, Florida. I'm sure somebody's out there like, okay, now do Florida. Good old Florida, land of the slow news day antics, right? So Florida, where the governor's opened everything up statewide. It's crazy, it's madness, it's the Wild West down there. Okay, so the hospitals, no, not overwhelmed. If you look at a cross-county average, it shows that they all have 20% availability. For them, based on last year's numbers, not a particularly unusual number for this time of year. Again, available ICU beds are at 18.5%. And I want to take a moment to point something out too, that and this helps really bring context to this situation. In the 2017-2018 flu season, we were treating people in hospital, like in tents, in hallways. I mean, there was a lot of expansion of capacity into field hospitals and other things like that. That was during the 2017-2018 flu season. Medical staff worked overtime, you know, I'm sure they were strained and stressed, but there were no lockdowns in regards to that. You know, not that it's any of my business, right? Okay, so now that being said, let's consider the most, or one of the more important aspects, timing. When were the measures enacted? I'm gonna do a screen share here in just a second. When were the measures enacted and what was that effect? Okay, so what we're gonna do here, pull this up, that was my, okay. So let's look at when we did things and what happened afterwards. So Florida removes, can everybody can see that, hopefully? Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Great. So Florida removes restrictions. Fauci says that, you know, Florida's asking for trouble. And then when we pit those restrictions being removed relative to other states, we do not see the same types of rise in cases. So we can go further. California versus Florida. California certainly closed indoor, outdoor dining, statewide curfews. I think they've banned outdoor dining. Again, numbers not commensurate to what we would think would happen in terms of, again, flattening the curve or stopping the spread. LA County, again, mask mandates, curfews, outdoor dining, things continue to escalate. There does not seem to be any marked effect. Ohio, same thing, mask mandates happen. Connecticut, fines for not wearing masks, and yet we still see these rises and falls that seem to be irrespective of the things that we're doing. We look at Minnesota. Now, this one's interesting. Minnesota had a shutdown order, but it occurred after the peak. But now they take credit for the fact that the shutdown was helping reduce cases, but it was already after a natural peak had occurred. Again, in Kentucky, same story. Up, 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 you know, continued restrictions. Okay, I'm going to move on because I know I'm going to run out of time here. So I want to kind of close off with some things. we've traded off $6.6 trillion of our money. That was as of April 15th. So I'm sure we spent much more since then. We've given up cancer screenings. We've there are all sorts of metrics in regards to the economy, healthcare, crime, suicides are up, domestic violence is up, arson is up, aggravated assault, burglaries. All these things are being cited as metrics related to the pandemic and lockdowns and economic despair. So I'll leave with this, and I know I'm out of time. What does this all mean? It means that when you take a terribly complex problem, such a brand new virus, and focus myopically on a singular variable, take all the dials, turn them up to 11, and attempt to achieve victory in that one variable while simultaneously ignoring everything else, you do something incredibly stupid. COVID restrictions are stupid. You knew this. They tried to talk you out of it, but now you know. Again, thank you.
Thank you so much, Jay. If we could go out of screen share, we'll go ahead.
Oh, yep.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Perfect. Aaron, go ahead. The floor is yours.
Well, I just want to thank Jonah for being here, or Jay, and I'm excited about what Jay said here on the on his opening statements. So I believe obviously that we need to take these precautions seriously. I don't believe that these precautions are silly in any way, shape, or form. We should do our part to wear face masks. We should do our part to socially distance and reduce that curve. The CDC and our local and statewide mandates are for our best, for our health, and are to reduce the transmission. As Jay said, flatten the curve and to stop the spread. One came first and then the other one. We need to do both. I think it's apparent that a second, third, or fourth wave is upon us. And for better or for worse, the U.S. we need to take COVID-19 very seriously. It's a serious threat. The curve was reduced in California. It was going down. However, much rhetoric has put doubt in the minds that this isn't more dangerous than common ailments like the cold or the flu, which are also caught through water droplets. I believe we need to reduce that curve, ensure that we give our hospitals the greatest amount of time prior to developments and through the development of pharmaceuticals, so that we can ensure that if there is a delay during the rollout, that we have the greatest chance of being able to support those that are getting the vaccination, those who will get the vaccination, and the rest of the people that could be saved by using those precautions and by not inundating those hospitals. We really need to reduce the death toll and the effects that many may live with for years to come after COVID-19. The evidence for this and the amount of research that's been done on this virus is acutely known over this past year or so. And a significant amount of research has been done. However, the after effects of COVID-19 are not widely known. And we need to take those into account when we're putting on our face masks, when we're keeping that 6-foot distance apart, when we are disciplining ourselves to not go to parties or go out and mingle or head over to that potluck and touch all of those utensils that people have touched before. We need to make sure that we're doing our best to protect them from ourselves, and we need to do it reasonably and responsibly. I'm not an expert. I don't have COVID-19, and I haven't had COVID-19, and I've been doing all these precautions. I've been making sure that I alcohol up before I touch, you know, doorknobs and things like that. I do my best to wear my face mask, and there have been some close calls with regard to maybe some psychosomatic people being sick, but I've been in some training, some environments where I've had to have interaction with people, and you know, they implemented the COVID measures during those trainings, and they were kind of they seemed at the time for probably some people in the training that they had they were overbearing. I mean, nobody likes to breathe through a face mask. Don't get me wrong. I'm not a big fan of breathing through a face mask, but no one in that course caught COVID, and I was with 17 other people there. It just, it takes some discipline and some diligence. And I think that the lives of our friends, our loved ones, those with comorbidities, I'm not gonna dazzle you with statistics, but I believe we need to think about those around us and think about our nurses and our doctors in the hospitals and do everything we can to reduce the spread while this vaccine gets rolled out. Thank you.
All right, thank you so much, Aaron. And now we'll enter into open discussion.
All right. Aaron, talk to me about your thoughts on, and you know, obviously I want to stick as closely as you can, and I think it's easy to bunny trail off sometimes to kind of different sort of subtopics, but so as far as restrictions, right, because that's what we're here to talk about, right?
Yeah. We're here to talk about whatever you want to talk about, brother.
No. Let's give the people what they want. They came here for a debate about COVID restrictions being stupid, so let's give them that, right? Okay, so outdoor dining, stupid, not stupid?
Depends. There, you know, outdoor dining, like I've seen, depends.
Okay, what's the science on it, right? Because that's what we should be following the science.
I would say that any situation where you're putting yourself within 6 feet of somebody else who may or may not have COVID-19, that you don't know who hasn't been living in a box, right, for a period of time. If you're closer than 6 feet even in a closed dining or an open dining situation, because I've seen several different kinds, right? I've seen people sitting in a chair in the middle of a field, right? That's very open. That's not backed by too much science, but
I don't think there's any respectable scientist that would say if you're sitting in the middle of a field by yourself, you should be wearing a mask.
Right. Okay. Right? So then we have other situations, right? We have a building where seating is, like, in some parts of the country, because not all the COVID restrictions are uniform, right?
I think that's really good too, because it certainly gives us a chance to compare and contrast, right?
I was recently in Maryland. The COVID restrictions in Maryland are completely different than California. I'm on lockdown mm-hmm. right now as I speak about this. Right. Can't go. I can, because of a county that I travel to go to work, I can literally not drive through that county because I can't get to work because I've been out of this. I've been outside 150 miles from that county. So let's go back. So I understand it's not uniform. So let's go back to your first question regarding outdoor dining, right? So you have some situations where there's like a tent, right? I don't know if you've ever been in a tent before, probably, but I don't know how safe that is. I don't know how long it would stay in a tent for with other people who may or may not have COVID-19. So,
right. So we're talking
talking about scientific aspect of being in a tent and being served food or for a religious ceremony, I would say that the contractability I'm gonna work from the flu and the common cold, right? Because that's the closest that we really have. Obviously, the after effects of COVID-19 are much more serious in certain cases. I know that myself. I've seen it firsthand.
Sure.
But I would say that if you're sitting in a field and you're getting served food, you have a very, your server has a low contractability of getting COVID-19 if you have COVID-19.
Right. So
in a field, I said a field, right? Now, okay. let's move that to an outdoor dining establishment where that is covered by tents, right?
Yeah, and I would say that would only represent a portion of outdoor dining. I don't think it's all tented. I think there's obviously a lot of, you know, people that have an exterior portion of their restaurant that they could use. So a tent is an example, certainly not the totality of examples.
I would say that you're increasing your susceptibility and the transfer if you're going into an enclosed environment. Now, I don't believe, like, for example, are those tents certified? Who at the CDC certified those tents? I don't know. So I really can't speak, but all I can say logically is if you're going from an outdoor place to a tent, you're probably going to be more susceptible because you're in a more enclosed space. Now okay. Let's move inside that building and let's take away the 25% cap on the attendees. Now we're talking about a situation where you could within minutes, hours, I'm not sure, you could have or spread COVID-19. And it really depends. It really depends. Like, I mean, we could sit here with, that's my view. So you asked about that question and I gave it to you.
Very good. I mean, my thought is that twofold. Number one, the science certainly does not suggest that outdoor dining is a significant spreader. That's something that we do know. The other thing that we know is that the LA County health official that was questioned about this, hey, why are you shutting down outdoor dining, did not have an answer. I actually have a full set of notes that I used to prep for this debate, which I, Carissa, I'll make available afterwards to everybody that would want it. But there's so much stuff that I've got kind of collated all together. But essentially, yeah, this lady was asked, hey, like, why are you shutting down outdoor dining? What are the numbers on the cases that have been connected to outdoor dining? She did not have any answer to that. And that it was being done out of as she put it, sort of a preponderance of caution. But the problem is that it's not a one-to-one trade-off, which is a part of actually my opening statement that I had to cut pretty short. But that's the whole point, right? Is that
your opening statement you had to cut short?
I know. I had too much. I prepared way too much for this debate. No, ultimately, we're talking about trade-offs, right? If this isn't a one-to-one kind of thing. If we enact restrictions so severe that that restaurant closes down, all those people are out of work. Right. And people losing their jobs directly related to all types of, negative mental health effects, the fact that they might lose their health insurance, all those types of things are a part of that equation. Right. And so if they don't have any data to back up the fact that outdoor dining is connected with any amount of significant spread, then to do that arbitrarily is to say that cutting off those people's livelihoods doesn't matter. So that's why I think the restriction on outdoor dining, stupid. I really do.
Outdoor dining.
I'm very frank and honest. I think the amount that we would do harm for businesses that are barely hanging on, to take that one sort of shred of hope away from them, that they have not only changed their entire dining scheme in order to attempt to remain open, but now we've just torpedoed that. And also, I don't know, this video went viral too. Where a lady had her outdoor dining thing all closed down. They spent thousands of dollars to like make that happen. And then a movie set ends up being across the street. They're filming and catering for the movie set set up in an outdoor dining fashion and was able to provide meals to the cast and crew that would have been identical to her serving food outdoors, but it was not allowed because she is a restaurant and they are the movie industry. And that's why I think that is also very, very stupid. She was visibly distraught that how is this possible that her restaurant absolutely cannot serve food safely somehow and that these people in fact can. And I agree.
Do you want me to defend the movie producers and the ability? Because I wouldn't defend it either.
Right. But that's my whole point, though, is that there shouldn't be a restriction on outdoor dining. And the fact that one person was and then all of a sudden another person wasn't makes light of the fact that that's stupid. Because it's an absolute double standard.
I believe
saying it's safe for the movie industry, but not for regular restaurants. How could that possibly be?
Okay. Correct me if I'm wrong, but you believe that people are disciplined enough and or COVID is not that big of a deal. It's a common flu.
I would never say that.
Okay.
Just, you know.
So, I can't defend a catering service in a movie scenario because I really can't speak to it because I don't know the details of the case. I don't know the details of the situation completely. Sure. And, I can't hope to put myself in the minds of a business owner that has spent their life's work trying to build a business and make that successful, especially in the food industry where it's so difficult.
It's so, very that's a tough business for sure.
So I can't really put myself. I really wish I could. I can only try to have empathy for those people. Sure. And
there's other restrictions too we could talk about too. We can.
I can't really go round and round about the outdoor dining areas. Like I said, I don't know who certifies those tents to be COVID-19 free or not free, but I don't think anyone was really thinking. About COVID-19 when those tents were designed. I think that people are just trying to make ends meet and try to survive in an environment the best they can that is not extremely conducive to profit. And that is that's probably setting them up for a lot of dreams being dashed, lots of funding being cut off, and the government has put in place some stop gaps. It seems for that. I'm not speaking for the government at all.
Right.
They have put some stop gaps in there. But at the end of the day, as the dominant form of life on the planet. I mean, when the dolphins come out and they tell us, hey, we're it, and we'll bow to them. But as a dominant form of life on the planet, I like to just postulate that everything born on this planet is born out of competition, to include a virus. Okay. Mm-hmm. And viruses mutate. Thankfully, we have a brain and we have the ability to strategize and work to overcome these kinds of problems. We've implemented ways for people to stopgap measures for those businesses.
But that's my whole point, though, is that we wouldn't have to stopgap the restaurants if the restrictions weren't. Again, I'm going off our topic, so I'm trying to remain on that. But if the restrictions weren't stupid, we wouldn't have to do that. Like, if you think about all the money that's been wasted. Because we've enacted things that make no sense, right? Like another one would be, you know, to get on another restriction, curfews. Like help me understand the restriction of curfews and how, number one, it's, I would say, at all like reasonably enforceable. But beyond that, what's happening, you know, for a, you know, say there's a restaurant that, you know, because curfews are enacted in a handful of places. If there's restaurants that have to shut down at 10 p.m., and you know that's like that's your spot you could go and like do stuff. Like, how many more people are gonna try to cram in? Like, you're basically concentrating things more. Does that make sense? Like, in other words, if you take setting up a curfew creates a set of barriers that all of a sudden you've taken what business could have been spread out over a slightly longer period of time. that people are going to max out whatever the limited capacity is of those restaurants, thereby making things worse, right? So like the idea that curfews, I do not understand the methodology behind curfews. Like, what are they trying to prevent? What are they trying to do in by enacting those?
Well, let's just take a look at the issue, right? So, with a curfew, what is happening is they're trying to reduce the
you're a little close to your camera, just, you know.
Sorry. They're trying to reduce the amount of people that are meeting up after work and traveling to other people's houses and mingling, creating those events after hours. Curfews would also, like, if there's like a county and it has no COVID restrictions and your county does have COVID restrictions and you are trying to prevent people in your county from getting sick, you enact a curfew that prevents people from traveling during a certain set of hours. You know, we're really industrious, right? I mean, if our parents tell us not to do something, we figure out a lot of times how to get around that. We're always thinking about how to game the system in some way, shape, or form. But if I know, and if I don't believe in COVID, or if I don't believe that it's a threat to me, and I really want to go to the club, right, and the clubs are closed in my county, well, I'll just go two counties over. And if that is something that the law enforcement and the public, the government and the publicly elected leadership in that area have deemed part of what they want to do to enforce and ensure the health of the people, so that people are prevented from bypassing those restrictions, then vote them out.
Okay, but ultimately, what we're saying though is that you're positing that curfews are not stupid.
No, they're a tool.
Okay, so I'm saying they're a poor tool that is not particularly enforceable, and, you know, in terms of people gathering, I don't think that. Okay, so let's look at it maybe from a slightly different angle. We don't have to stay on curfews for too long. It's just another one that I think is kind of more of an outlier. Like, there might be ones that are a lot, you know, we could have more issue with because there's more science or other things to back them up. But I understand what you're saying as far as we're trying to change people's behavior. And what we're saying is that we're not going to stop everybody, but we'll stop some people. And if we stop some people, then that's worth it. Is that more or less what you're saying?
You can only work within the scope of your control, right? In other states, not California, I'm sure that the counties are smaller. And so tools like that have been used. I mean, the laws across the country are all different. And we can find a good amount of laws that don't make sense.
Sure.
I mean, you go to some states and there's some laws on the books that make absolutely no sense. I'd agree with that. In California, those counties are much larger, right? So it's harder to bypass restrictions. If I'm living in Humboldt County and I want to bypass the restrictions on Humboldt County, I have to go to like Trinity County, which is over an hour and a half drive, or I have to go to Oregon or Del Norte. So it's not one county and it's not one size fits all, but it is a control mechanism. And you may say it's a poor tool, but it may be a good tool in certain places. At least in here, they believe it's a good tool. And
at what point though would they say, okay, now the curfew's 7 p.m. Now the curfew's you know, as they continue to tighten that's just sort of the slippery slope. But let's move on to something else here.
Brother, we're in a full blown lockdown unless you're part of like the 18.
Oh, it could always get worse. You think you're locked down, but it's nothing compared to what China did, right? They like welded people in their homes, right? They did all sorts of crazy stuff.
That's I saw the videos.
All right, so let's talk about restrictions relative to the trade-offs. And so my point being that I listed a bunch of different restrictions, and those restrictions have absolutely real effects on a variety of other aspects of life, right? And so, the amount that we've spent so far, again, is something like, I got a number, something like $6.6 trillion was spent as of April 15th, and that number clearly has to be higher by now. So I don't know what the number is currently, but that's between quantitative easing, PPP loans, other stimulus money that was sent out to people and other institutions. So we paid all of that money. And then on top of that, we have all these restrictions that affect people negatively. I could list off just one aspect of it, right? Because a lot of the debate is centered around, well, you want to go get your hair cut and that's going to kill grandma, and so you're an awful person, right? Like, that's sort of what it's been boiled down to, which I think is really, it's like a Twitter battle. It's just sort of worthless in my mind. Like, it doesn't really go anywhere, right?
Yeah. Do you know what the GDP of the United States is?
It's less than it was before the lockdown, that's for sure. I don't know offhand, but I mean, if you happen to know, that's good. But I mean, I think the point being, it's not all, my point is that it's not all about money, that there's actual, when we talk about statistics, right, and we talk about COVID deaths, like, those are people. And I think that's fair to point out that they are. But in the same token, there are people that are connected to statistics on the other side of the equation, which, have to do some of the ones on mental health that that I was able to find. Thoughts of suicide from surveys have gone up twofold from 2018. Emergency mental health visits for children are up between 24% to 31%.
Accidental deaths.
What's that? Accidental deaths.
Accidental deaths.
What about accidental deaths?
Where are we at with accidental deaths?
I'm not sure how that's relevant. Are you talking about like suicides or? Why would you bring that up?
That's an intentional death. No.
Right. I know. I understand. Death. I mean, what's that?
Accidental deaths.
Okay, so, but help me understand why. Why is that relevant?
You were bringing up the negative aspects that I haven't agreed to. That I haven't fully agreed to.
Sure.
I haven't really dived into it, but I was bringing out the accidental deaths is lower this year than previously and in previous years.
Okay, and why is that?
Because we have been indoors, or at least a portion of the country, a portion of the world has been indoors for a good period of time.
Okay.
Or limiting themselves significantly, whereas they wouldn't limit themselves as significantly in the past.
Okay, so I'm certainly willing to grant, because I do think that a dishonest person would say that should be sort of hand-waved away. But I do think that one of the weird sort of side effects from everything that's been done is that people are, I believe, driving quite a bit less. And that certainly has led to less car accidents. It's sort of weird byproduct. But what I would say is that a lot of that having to do with telecommuting has nothing really to do with the lockdown itself, other than that people were incentivized to find a way to continue to work without driving because of them not having to then go into the office. So that's something that could have been done irrespective of the virus itself. So I understand that they're down, but it's sort of like a weird byproduct that I don't really, it's not that it doesn't count, it certainly does. But it's something that could have been done anyway, in that it's really not, related to the lockdown specifically. It happened because of the lockdown. I'm just saying, like, it could have happened anyway. So when we talk about less accidents, though, I would rebut with, yes, people are doing less, but doing less is also not good, in that, there's less people going to the gym. There's less people working out. Certainly things like, those relative health aspects that people are no longer able to engage in is having a detrimental effect on their health. I know there was a survey done by individuals where over 25% of individuals surveyed gained a significant amount of weight. I included. right? Same here, right? I've gained like the old quarantine 15, right? But people,
I can go weigh myself if you want, but I think I've actually lost some weight.
Oh, good for you. That's awesome. I have gained some, but ultimately, the people in that survey related that weight gain because of increased anxiety related to the pandemic, that they were essentially stress eating because of the, honestly, I think it has a lot to do with the way that the news presents this whole problem, is that it is literally like society ending. Like every time we turn on the news, there's like more COVID cases and these people that, like, it just continues on and on and on. And the fear that they're sort of promulgating is a mind killer. People stop thinking, they get anxious, they don't know what to do, they're trapped in their homes, they're eating more. Those are all really not good things. And they will, those negative effects will stack up over time. And they're the type of effects that don't go away quickly. I think there's, again, there's a multitude of trade-offs that people are not, I would highly encourage people to listen to, I'm probably gonna mispronounce his last name, but Jay Bhattacharya. He is one of the people at Stanford that's done a number of studies, serological studies, kind of tracking infection rates. But he has a background in infectious disease and that type of study. But he also has a master's or PhD, I'm not sure which, in economics. And so he's got a unique perspective that brings both those worlds together and doesn't just say we have to stop COVID at all costs, but is able to sort of take into account, like, there's way more costs here than we're accounting for. And they're very severe and they're wide sweeping and they're really important. And again, my one of my main arguments is that these restrictions, be it as they may, can't be considered in a vacuum. They have to be weighed against the things that, that are happening because of them. Your thoughts?
I give you points for your Dune quote, fear is the mind killer.
It is the mind killer.
I believe that there, that, you know, I don't know what to think. I don't know what you're fighting. Is it COVID or is it the news? Because
I think it's an information war. I think that's very important for you to, that you're sort of pointing that out. I do think that it's sort of both, but an information war is a large part of that. And it's that there are a lot of voices that are not being heard. There's a lot of contrarian views that are extremely important.
I would say that I try to be pretty disciplined about the kind of news that I get. And I really want anyone who ever listens to this debate again, ever, I would like to encourage you, and I'd like to encourage everyone else, to warrant their information. I find it very challenging in this day and age to, you know, with the multiple aspects of information that's coming at me, whether by social media or by my favorite news aggregate sites, or anywhere. It's, everything is very polarized. We've been hearing that term consistently. I mean, it wouldn't be, so the social dilemma wouldn't be on Netflix right now if there wasn't some people that believe that is actually occurring. So, you know, I will bring out let me just talk about the news a little bit. I would just encourage everyone to warrant the information that they're getting, right? Take it with a little bit of salt. Now, if that's Tucker Carlson, you need to take with a little bit of salt, or if that's CNN, you need to take with a little bit of salt. You need to do your own due diligence. Well, absolutely. It's not that, you know, the answer would be like, oh, I just want it to be easy. Guess what, kids? Guess what, folks? Life isn't easy. It's for some people, I'm sure, but for everybody else, life isn't easy, and you have to warrant the information that you get. When somebody tells you something, whether they're a news report or whether it's your friend, you've got to warrant that information. And you hope that wherever it's coming from, whether it be a major news site or if it's a local news reporter, you would want that information to be warranted. But you got to do it yourself. You got to make sure that it's not just for the money that they get for the commercials that they put between your interview and the next interview, right? because they are making money, right? So I don't know if it's
news. We need to separate both those arguments.
One is the news, and one is COVID. So I would say your mental state, whether you're watching news, will it be affected if you're living at home in the lockdown situation? Probably. That's where everyone has to understand where we're going with this. That was something that was looked at a long time ago, at least for me, was, hey, get ready. 18 months for a vaccine. Here comes warp speed. And we're at December 15th, right? That's less.
That's not 18.
Will I get the vaccine in 18 months? Probably. But
we could certainly talk about that. I don't know, Carissa, if you think that's worth kind of delving into, but
unless
I do want to keep it on, like, you know, central. The talk about.
It's central to the actual, like, restrictions, if we could just wrap it back to more specifically whether or not the restrictions are stupid, that would be great.
Okay, I can actually tie those two together, I think. Mm-hmm. So Aaron, just kind of think of it this way. So what we do know so far is that it is relatively unknown whether or not the vaccines themselves will give us any ability to go back to normal. So the vaccines themselves seem to be a prophylactic in terms of mitigating symptoms, but there doesn't appear to be any consensus at all or any kind of definitive information that the vaccine will keep you from spreading the virus. So it is maybe you could connect it in that way, in that even if this vaccine rolls out, Aaron, and even if you get the vaccine, in theory, you could still get COVID and pass it on to someone else. So in regards to restrictions, the vaccine is, I think, relatively moot. You know, I don't know if you have a feeling about that, but that does, I mean, that's how I would tie kind of those two together. I mean, beyond that, I still think that and I don't know, Aaron, I really am curious on your thoughts, like, given, and there's so much more I could kind of say as far as the trade-offs, do you not feel like the amount of money that has been spent, the amount of restrictions that have been put in place, the amount of mental health, physical health, and economic health that the country has taken damage from, are those restrictions really serving the country well? Are they smart? Let's say, you know, that would be the opposite of stupid, right? Like, are the restrictions smart in that way, given the trade-offs?
I think they're smart given the trade-offs.
You do.
I think that they're smart given the trade-offs. I asked you before what the GDP of the United States is, and I'm speaking from California in the United States. GDP is $20.49 trillion. The second country that comes up after the United States is China with $13.61 trillion. And okay.
So what you're saying, though, is that relative from a monetary standpoint.
I'm sorry, the brief. If we could let him finish his point, and then then you can respond 100%.
Yes, I'm so sorry.
No, you're good.
So,
better.
Then we can go to, like, I mean, even you go to any other country, like Japan, $4.97 trillion. I mean, the United States has almost twice the GDP of China. And there are other countries that are suffering significantly more with their lockdowns, and they're operating with a lot less funds and a lot less finances than the United States. If there is any country that has a good system or a good ability to weather this storm, it is the United States. Now, it doesn't help the rest of the world. Like, that I'm sure it falls on very deaf ears from somebody in a country whose GDP is not significant, right? So what do they have to do? I think that we're all suffering in a very similar way with regard to being having to go through the social distancing, what countries are implementing social distancing? Many of them. Which countries are implementing mask wearing? A lot of them. It can't, the entire world cannot be completely wrong on this. Unless you're telling me they are, and then I will let you have it. Go ahead. How about it?
Sure. Okay. So can I'm not sure the exact question, but I mean, it sounds like you're saying, has the whole world gone mad, right? Is that right? Either everyone's right or everyone's wrong. And I would say, I would call that a false choice.
Let's put it on a spectrum.
Maybe I'm misrepresenting. I don't want to misrepresent you. What's that?
Put it on a spectrum. They're mostly right with the implementation, but we've got to agree on implementation. What you think is not right and what you think is silly and what you think is not so right. Silly. And I mean, so what exactly do you feel is silly and what do you exactly feel is not silly? Because it'd be difficult to...
Sure. So I mentioned, okay, so again, there's two different aspects to this, right? Like there's things that are sort of silly because we're not following the science, and there's things that relative to their trade-offs are silly because we're doing so much damage. You know, it's like if there's an analogy somewhere, I don't even need to say it, but it's basically, yeah, if we're doing more, if the cure is worse than the disease, then we shouldn't do it, right? Like that would be what I'm at least trying to get at in terms of trade-offs. So when we talk about restrictions that don't make sense on their face, because there's really no or very little or very tenuous science to even back it up, if any, those are silly. Those are stupid, not smart, senseless. And I would say then some of the restrictions that maybe make some amount of sense or have some amount of science to back them up, or have some type of logical kind of framework, I would challenge those all but a few, in that I think the trade-offs, again, that the things that we're trading off is not worth it. I just don't. And I think, and maybe I'll bring this into more of a solution kind of based argument, in that I think we were given a very binary choice, right? It was like lockdown or just let her rip. Right. Just let it run wild and everyone's going to just go nuts. And it's, you know, it's going to be, you know, mayhem. So I think that is the tragedy. That is the false choice. I think people like Jay Bhattacharya, and again, I'm sorry if I'm saying it, I'm probably butchering his name, but those that have been involved with a particular project called the Great Barrington Declaration, I think people really need to look at that. I think they need to actually go to that website. They need to, don't Google the Great Barrington Declaration. Go to the Great Barrington Declaration's website and read what they actually say about themselves. Because the point is that that there isn't just this sort of singular consensus, that there are people that think differently on this. And again, like I would say that those, you know, those trade-offs are just, they're just not worth it. I don't think it's worth, you know, kind of trading those things. As far as solutions, sorry, I actually lost my train of thought. I found it very quickly. A targeted approach was a third option that no one ever really gave serious consideration to. When we look at the deadliness of this disease on the demographic from 0 up to 100, right? There, that is a hugely different sliding scale, where the difference between 18 and younger versus 80 and older is like night and day. It's an enormous difference. The fact that elementary schools are closed is an absolute travesty. There's no science to back that up whatsoever. Children are not a significant spreader based on the science of this disease. And they're not a significant spreader to teachers, which would kind of take that particular, yes, yeah, oh, hey, all right, now we're getting somewhere. Aaron, Aaron didn't like that. No, it's true. The science behind children spreading the disease in a school setting is very, very, very minimal, if any. It is not a significant spreader in this particular case. And again, I'm talking, at the very least, I'm talking elementary schools. There certainly is a case to be made, maybe at the high school level. I think that actually there's still a good argument there, that's not necessarily a significant issue. College level, maybe that's where the threshold could get changed. But think about this. when we locked everybody down, and in addition to that, we sent college students home to learn remotely, right? And you talked about, you know, what can we enforce? We can only kind of do what we can do in the framework that we have, right? And the ability to control things. So we took college students that are probably going to go out and party and do stuff, and we put them back in their aging parents' homes, as opposed to being at college. We actually made things worse doing that. That move was a terrible move. Same as where New York made people that were COVID positive go back into long-term care facilities. That was a horrendous blunder that the governor there should absolutely be held to account on, but wasn't. That to me is, those are two very, very obvious things. Long-term care facilities and the targeted protection of those individuals, that would have been the smart move. Far and away, you could debate almost anything else. That I think is undebatable, that we have done, many, many countries have done a very poor job of recognizing that a targeted approach to elderly people would have been an enormous benefit, that they absolutely should have done that. It would have paid huge dividends. Especially when you look at the number of, when you look at the age demographics in terms of death. Sorry, that was a long rant, but.
You just said, so, okay, let's go with spreaders, right? Let's talk about the spreaders, right? So you said that the children in elementary school would not be spreaders. I don't think that they're, you can correct me if I'm wrong, but if you have COVID and you're walking around, and everyone has been very sensitive to who's getting sick, but there are still patients that are asymptomatic and they are carrying COVID. That could be elementary school students, that could be your high school students. And you did mention that
talk about asymptomatic, so let's keep going.
May not, you said, we don't know if it just handles the symptoms and people can still spread it. So what I'm hearing you say here is that that we should target intelligently our grandparents and those with the comorbidities, and that we should care less about the children that may or may not be spreading it, and we should not get the vaccine because it may not also help. It may not reduce the spread. It may increase our ability to be asymptomatic and not end up in the morgue. But is that what you're saying? I'm just trying to get a beat on what.
Yeah. So a couple of things. I would say, number one, I do think that the vaccine potentially makes the most sense for people that are, let's say, 70 plus. I think that does make more sense, at least in so much that if those vaccines are safe, then the downside risk for a vaccine for an 80 plus person is much less than them actually getting COVID. Them getting COVID is definitely worse in that regard. So I do think we should look at, if those vaccines are safe, you know, if that data bears out, then that vaccine for that population absolutely makes sense. Vaccines for people that are 18 and younger, or especially 12 and younger, they have not given the vaccine in terms of their test trials to anyone under 12. So to me, that's very, very dicey to roll that out in mass and mandate that in any way. That would be really, really silly, I think. What we will also know is that the flu has killed more kids in America this year than COVID has. And that's we need to understand that the relative danger for COVID, what's that?
Cite your source.
Sure.
On that one.
Yeah. I will pull that up. But as I'm pulling that up, Aaron, tell me your thoughts on asymptomatic spread, because that was something else that you had mentioned.
Asymptomatic spread. Okay, so you don't have any symptoms and you're spreading COVID and you don't have the traditional cough, or you look like you're not sick, right? I you know, if we're just talking about a couple people that end up in the ER and then they get out and it's fine, I don't think that that's what we're talking about here. I think that it's an extremely real virus. This isn't a belief.
The virus is real. I 100% agree.
This is not a religion. It's not some, you know, there's people that say that, oh, I believe, you know, I don't believe in it. I don't believe in it. And this isn't a virus. There are base pairs. It has a gene sequence. And for some people, they are more susceptible. Do we absolutely know down to the person who is most susceptible to this? Do we have a numbers on that?
We have some demographic.
May have some demographics, but the issue I take with the spreading of COVID-19 is you may survive from it. There may be people that are dying of COVID, and I absolutely believe it. I mean, the news does not lie. I mean, you look across the span and the spectrum of news, and you'll see it. It is a serious problem. It's affecting our hospitals. And those that don't die from it are having problems. I forget the term. What do they call it? They're calling it now. You may know what the term is, but they have additional problems outside of just the once, like the flu, right? We like to liken this to the flu. It's not the flu, okay? You may get sick like the flu, but you know, this is not the flu. It's putting people in the morgue. And even after some people have recovered, and I say recovered with air quotes because they are somewhat recovered.
It depends on who's recovering, because if you're talking about a healthy person, the likelihood of them recovering well is actually really, really high. When you're talking about people that have comorbidities that didn't die that are then recovering, yes, those people do have extenuating circumstances coming off that.
I'm talking about people that are waking up in the morning that don't have comorbidities, that are waking up feeling tired, lapses in memory, inability to do things that they would normally do. I'm talking about the people where they can't perform a normal job because COVID has impacted them, like they call them long haulers. And the people that you don't just get sick like the flu or a cold and you go back to normal, but you are plagued by the after effects of this and the destructive nature of it. And it doesn't kill you, but it's going to affect your life. It may have, you know, we talk about the finances, right? And I really think that's the last thing that we should be thinking about, even though I bring up GDP and being able to weather a storm. But, you know, I think we got to look at, you know, 20 years from now, we got to look at those people that were long haulers, and we're going to have to take care of those people, right? And there are a lot of people in hospitals right now that are dying of this virus because they either didn't believe that it was a serious threat, or they didn't feel that unless they knew somebody personally. I've seen the social media posts. Well, if I didn't, has anybody actually known anyone that's been affected by COVID? And up until that point, I sit there and I go, yes, I know people that have been affected by COVID. I know people personally that are long haulers, and it is extremely destructive of seeing it firsthand. Like, I'm not talking about the first couple of weeks. I'm talking like months afterwards. They can't do.
Yeah, I would.
They can't do what they.
Yeah,
used
I would
to
agree. Do. I mean, I do think that these people are affected, you know, especially if they have, again, some of those exist, you know, if you have asthma, if you have diabetes, some of these other conditions certainly are exacerbated and your recovery is much, much longer. I'm not disputing that. I'm not disputing that the virus is real. I'm not disputing that some people have been very stupid, especially if they have those types of conditions and they decide that they do not care about the risk. That may not be a wise thing for them to do. Okay, so children four, so let's see here. This is actually something that was fact-checked by PolitiFact. For younger people, seasonal flu in many cases is deadlier than the virus, than the COVID-19 virus. Mostly true. The numbers from the 2018-2019 flu season, 480 flu deaths among children 0 to 17. So far in 2020, 90 people have died that are in that age category from COVID. So it is the flu is substantially more dangerous for younger people than COVID-19. And then that would certainly parlay into this idea that restrictions, coming back to restrictions, are silly and stupid for elementary schools. This is not something we should be doing. We should not be putting a 6-year-old that's in kindergarten in front of a computer all day and having him sit and not being able to like play with his classmates at lunchtime. There's reports of people not wanting the students to talk because they feel like too much talking while they're eating is going to spread COVID everywhere. So they have them not talk during lunch. I mean, these are interactive facets of a person's childhood that are important. They're developmental items that we're just immediately just sort of cutting off. And I think that, again, based on the science, we're following the science, we're following what we know, that this is not a significant problem, and it is causing a significant problem by enacting that restriction. I would say that is stupid.
Dying and giving grandpa COVID-19 are two different things, right? So a child dying of COVID and a child being asymptomatic and being able to seemingly pass it on to grandpa and grandma or somebody with COVID comorbidities are two different things, right? And going to your other grandparents and then passing it to other kids and passing it to other people. And
then everyone's infected. Sorry.
Dying and giving and being able to pass it on are two different things. And I think that when you have loved ones that are in the hospital, and you know that everyone wishes they had more time. Everybody wishes they had more time. I wish that I didn't spend so much time on Nintendo probably when I end up there, but. You know, if you're in a situation where you've been diagnosed with COVID and you're in an ICU and you're in an ER, you wish you had more time. You wish you could be breathing, right? And
Go ahead. I have a sense to interrupt too much. Go ahead.
So I would say that that developmental trade-off is worth it in comparison to be in a situation where grandpa and grandma or one of your relatives would be able to be there for you in a situation where if COVID didn't exist, they would be there for you. And right. I get the developmental part of it, but I think that we've seen some, you know, I was recently in a course, and I know that a lot of people don't like teleworking and hybrid scenarios and virtual classes and stuff. And I think right now is the perfect time to go to school. A lot of people are just staying home and not doing anything. This is the perfect time to go to school. And I think that we have an aspect that we haven't really even tapped. I'm gonna bring it back to precautions are silly. Teleworking and the virtual scenario and working through video chat is a great opportunity, right?
I would say it's not a restriction.
Right now, we're doing it right now. We're working through a chat right now.
Yep.
And it's more because of distance than anything else.
Sure.
But there's another aspect of being able to talk in a video chat in the classroom. When you're sitting there with other people, you don't know what they're thinking. They may have the greatest idea on the planet. I was in a class recently where I had both situations. Because of the bubble situation in the beginning of the course, I had to quarantine in my hotel room for a period of time, get a test, and then I could somewhat interact with the other people in the class. obviously with a 6-foot distance and with masks and everything like that. Nobody got COVID, at least that we knew of in the class. But one thing I noticed between, and this touches upon developmental problems because of COVID-19, because you're not interacting with children. I noticed that people were more apt in the virtual classroom to speak and to put in the chat box what they thought when they were going through the instruction. Basically, what was going on in their mind, whether it be a quote or whether it be an add-on, that they would not have been able to talk about if they were physically in the classroom. And I noticed the change between that, and you can identify that it doesn't matter, or that it does matter, or that there's no value to that. But there were some, in that class, we were talking about some complex theories in communication, and there were several classmates who were extremely bright, and they were really brilliant in the way that they brought out ideas and other aspects that I didn't really think about in that classroom setting because of the precaution of doing the video interface. They could type out, hey, this quote is from Sun Tzu, or this quote is from this person. And it brought a lot of light to the conversation that the instructor was, when they were teaching. And then when we went to a classroom setting, guess what? I was robbed of having that person's opinion because we didn't have a chat box that their thoughts could just, I could read them immediately. So,
right. Go ahead.
In that sense, that was something that I enjoyed, right? That was something that I enjoyed from those students. And I think that precaution, I don't know how much merit we want to give to that method of teaching and that method of instruction, but I thought it was good.
I thought it was beneficial.
I'm sorry, I'm going to actually jump in really fast here.
Yeah.
If you want to kind of respond and maybe start your kind of closing statement, and then Aaron, you can go ahead with your closing statement, and then we'll get to questions. That would be wonderful. But go ahead and respond. And
yeah, no problem. Aaron, I would just say two things. Number one, that there's a big difference between more college age students that have had the benefit of all those social interactions as children, and then are now in a situation that they can navigate an online world that is certainly very, very different from the in-person world. I would also say that there's a huge age and developmental difference between what needs to go on and happen in an interactive fashion and the way some people learn kinesthetically, especially at a young age. There's a huge gulf in developmental ages between kind of what you're describing, which I don't disagree that remote learning has some interesting advantages, and yes, it maybe breaks down some barriers that wouldn't have otherwise been there. But in relation to younger age school children, that's very, very different, not apples to apples, certainly apples and oranges. But that being said, as far as closing statements, so a couple of things that I think, again, I want to bring the debate back to restrictions. And again, I talked about a few of those restrictions that I think don't make sense from a logical or science-based approach, things like banning outdoor dining, curfews to a large degree. I think the way that we have not had a targeted approach is really, really, to me, that's a tragedy that we have not done that. I think people need to expand. Aaron, you talked about listening to the news and vet and warrant what you listen to. I think people would really be better served by listening to a little bit broader of a appetite of news. And I think people like, again, Jeffrey Tucker, I think in some of his things that he talks about with the American Economic Institute, I think Jay Bhattacharya, I think that there's the researchers that put together the book, The Price of Panic, which I certainly delved into and in kind of looking at the other side of the COVID debate. We need to expand our ability to find these sources of information and be able to, you're right, it's not going to be easier. And I think that's a really great point. I think that's, really good life advice that people are going to have all different types of agenda, money can influence things, politics, all of that. But if we're not going beyond those immediate, easy, just give me the headline, just give me the first paragraph stuff, we need to go beyond that and further than that. I think people like Jeremy Hammond, I think people like RFK Jr., there's people that have different perspectives that are certainly well-respected people that we need to hear. Things like the Great Barrington Declaration. People need to look at that for themselves. Don't Google these things. Go and find the original source. Get it unfiltered first, and then make your decisions based on that. I think I've made a good case generally for that the restrictions are in fact stupid. I think we all intuitively know this. We can recognize that there is a lot of damage being done, that those trade-offs are not worth it, that those trade-offs involve real people being affected in real time, and that we can't just hand wave those things away, and that there are other options available. I think that I really respect and appreciate Aaron having this conversation with me, and I really, really hope that people have more conversations like this. And again, I'm so happy that Modern Day Debate is hosting these things. This is super important, and I really appreciate you guys.
Thank you so much, and we're really happy to have you on. Aaron, if you want to say anything, and then we can get to the questions.
Yeah, so in the very beginning, Jay brought up essential jobs, tyranny, 2 weeks of quarantine, the tragedy that damages this has damaged the economy, the binary choice. He brought up the flatten the curve, and now it's stop the spread, and and I think that what he's trying to get at is that there's more intelligent ways of doing, of making sure that the spread doesn't happen. And from my point of view, we can't all agree on probably the best way of doing things. And I'm sure that the first rollout on in any situation for pandemic, for the first date that somebody goes on, it always has some problems. So I will concede a little bit to that. But overall, I think that we see a event where people and children and families, they let their guard down a little bit. They become a little bit less disciplined. And we see an event about 2 weeks later. We'll look at an event like Halloween or Thanksgiving. And we see the effects a little bit after that. I would argue instead of tyranny, just personal and self-discipline, if at all possible. And if we can't get that from ourselves, so people don't believe that COVID is real, then we have the government and our elected officials that can try to enforce, or at least lead us towards not being in a spreading COVID around and to try to keep us safe. So I would just, you know, I'd like to close with, we're not out of the woods yet, but we're getting there. And I think the thing that people in America need to know, and in around the world, anyone who sees this on YouTube or any of the other forums, is, you know, the hope is right around the corner. Like, it is literally right around the corner. Vaccines are, Moderna just got approved, Pfizer's been approved, and we're going to have more COVID vaccines than we know what to do with. I've been saying it since like May. We're going to have more COVID vaccines than we know what to do with. We just have to hang on a little bit longer for those people with those comorbidities, our grandparents, our ailing family members, or people that may be of high risk. We just got to be a little bit more disciplined and make sure that, you know, if we do that, we can be around them, enjoy them, and be with them for another day.
Thank you so much, Aaron. And thank you both so much for coming on. We have a couple questions here. The first one is from Maverick. It's a question for the brief. Where are the millions of deaths that were predicted? Follow the science is fine when it is accurate, but what about when it is drastically wrong? Lose freedom for a flu.
Yeah, I mean, my response to that would be, I mean, he's essentially referencing models. There's certainly been an enormous issue with the way that these models were put together. One of the initial models in regards, and you can look this up, it sounds crazy, but it's one of the genesis for one of the models that was created in regards to social distancing was actually a high school science project. And I know that sounds nuts, but essentially this gals, and it's not to say that it's completely wrong that there couldn't be a high school science project that's brilliant in that way, but ultimately the science being put into it was sort of declarative. It wasn't, they basically said, we believe this is true, and if we do this, X is going to happen. So they created a model that adhered to what they declared to be true. And that girl's father happened to be fairly well connected in some of the scientific or intellectual community. And that model is kind of like ran, you know, from that point forward. And these models clearly were terribly flawed. I mean, if you look at the very beginning, Michael Osterholm did a interview on Joe Rogan, where this was in like March 10th. And they said conservatively, but in the next 3 to 7 months, conservatively with lockdowns, there'll be 480,000 deaths and like 98 million hospitalizations. The numbers were like off the charts. So I think that's what he's talking about. And I agree. I think the problem is the discussion. What we're having right now is an actual discussion of ideas and like vetting those things. And so I think he's right. If the science doesn't make sense, it should be vetted. It should be peer reviewed. It shouldn't just be touted as gospel and ran with.
Gotcha. All right. Well, thank you. The next question is from Mark Reed. He says, to the brief, would you be fine with one of your family members dying if it meant not having a lockdown?
That's a great question. You know, again, I would say I don't want anyone to die unnecessarily. Do people die in America and that's unavoidable? Yes. I think, again, this is the false choice that we've been presented with. I feel like that's a dodgy way of answering this question. I don't want to be dishonest with it. I'll come at it from an angle they probably don't expect. Many of my family members, if not most, are Christians. And although it would be incredibly tragic, and if there was a way to avoid it, I think that would be good. But ultimately, I believe that heaven exists and that they would be there. And that even though that's not I don't condone people being foolish or irresponsible, at the same time, there's something that goes beyond death in that regard. So for me, it would be sad, but not sort of an ultimate tragedy that would sort of haunt me.
All right. Well, thank you both so much for coming on.
Mm-hmm. I've got one thing. Worldwide deaths is at 1.634-ish million.
Uh-huh.
So I just wanted to identify that that's like the worldwide death count. And I think that if we just ignored it altogether, that if COVID doesn't exist, or we just, you know, anything that was related to this conspiracy of COVID, the deaths would be a lot higher because we wouldn't have a name and we wouldn't have a medical practice. We wouldn't have science that would attack this as just another flu. And because of that excellent care that people are getting in the United States, and because of the many people that are not going out and spreading the virus and people that are staying home and implementing these practices, hospitals are able to breathe in this environment. And they're able to give that life-giving care to those people. And the more ICU beds, the lower the percentage of ICU beds that are available, and as it eclipses the ability to care for people, I believe that that's when people start to die. when they can't get care. So that's what I wanted to add to the millions of deaths on, I can't remember his name's question.
Gotcha. All right. Well, thank you. And I really appreciate both of you coming on, and to the audience, I really appreciate you watching. Be sure to check out the links in the description. If you like this debate, be sure to subscribe and like the video. And we will definitely be seeing you for future debates. Thank you all for taking time out of your busy schedules, and keep on separating the reasonable from the unreasonable.
Did you know using your browser in incognito mode doesn't actually protect your privacy? Take back your privacy with IPVanish VPN. Just one tap and all your data, passwords, communications, browsing history, and more will be instantly protected. IPVanish makes you virtually invisible online. Use IPVanish on all your devices, anytime you go online at home, and especially on public Wi-Fi. Get IPVanish now for 70% off a yearly plan with this exclusive offer at ipvanish.com/audio.
Sick of being upsold at gyms?
My guy, you're currently a base member. For $90 more, I can upgrade you to our Shred membership. For $130 more, you'll be a Swole member. And for just $300 more, you'll reach Sweat Platinum.
At Planet Fitness, you'll get energy without the upsell. Never pushy, always free fitness training and equipment for every workout. It's fitness that fits your budget. Join Planet Fitness for just $1 down and $10 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, May 10th. See Home Club for details.